Welcome, guys. God, thanks so much for asking me to speak. And my name is Chris R. I am from Ingram, Texas. Y'all think y'all know what Appalachia is. Listen, this is, Ingram, Texas is really central Texas. We're about as country as it gets right here. So y'all got nothing on anybody. We go out at night, there's banjo playing all over the hill country. I'm just saying. So God, thanks, Cindy. It was so good to get to hear you again. And stuff you said resonated like a big dog. And I wish I could speak that well. Let me just get that out of the way. You know, if y'all are expecting a polished speaker like Sydney, you wait a minute, and because Steve's fixing to get up in an hour, all right? And he's the best. So what the hell? You know, this is all good. And I'm delighted to be in a room full of like-minded folks. I got to tell you, in some of these deals, you know, you get to these conferences and you're in a lineup with a whole bunch of speakers and it gets a little uncomfortable at times because you may be talking to some folks that don't believe in the 12 steps and don't believe in God and don't believe in it. And it's like, okay, so I'm spending all my time, you know, defending myself after. It's like, it's nice to be on a deal with a bunch of like-minded folks. And our experiences are all different, guys. And I'm going to tell you that's for a fact. My experience may be different than yours. And anytime I speak these days, I try to make sure that I mention this. You know, if I say anything that you don't agree with, I'm sorry as I can be. And you'll get over it. You can put me on that little fourth step in that first column right there. You can stick that in there because bless you guys. All I can do is one thing, and that's share my experience. I come from a perspective, and I'm going to get to my story here, but I come from a perspective. I was one of these cats, similarly with Sydney that struggled a long time trying to get this. Guys, I was in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous for nearly 7 years and never picked up a 30-day chip. So, you know, I'm the little chronic relapser from hell. And it's just part of my story, guys. I've also worked 27 years in a treatment center, do clerical work for a hospital. And I get to see a lot of little alcoholics and little dope fiends in there struggle with getting sober. And a lot of them for the same reason that I struggled back in the early 80s trying to get well. So it's just part of my story, guys. And if you can identify with it, great. And I mean, if you can't, that's fine too. I love you. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to tell you guys, the older I get, I maybe have something to do with it. I'm so attached to this fellowship. I know where I was heading and I know what would have happened. And I'm going to a funeral tomorrow from a guy that was around the program for years and years and years and then decided that he didn't need AA anymore. And in short order, it was about 6 months and he passed away. And nicest guy you'd ever want to come across. And it's going to be a tough funeral. And I don't want to be that guy. So my sobriety date's November 13th, 1987. And I hope I keep that one. I think if I keep doing what I'm doing, I'm going to be okay. But, you know, I got to tell you, guys, Ingram, Texas is about 60 miles northwest of San Antonio. We're like in the geographic center of Texas, almost a few hundred miles from there. I fly out of San Antonio. When I go fly one of you guys for a face-to-face, that's where I'll fly out of. And little old town. Guys, my dad got us to the Hill Country early on. I was in 1964, I think, when he moved us to the Hill Country. He liked water. But I come from a great family. It's just exactly what was shared earlier. Guys, there was no goofiness. If there was any goofiness in my family, it was because I was in it. You know, mom was a professional artist, I mean, international artist. She's just unbelievable. My father was a lithographer, which is a printer for you uneducated folks. Back in the day, he was a bookbinder. He was a craftsman from just spectacular guy. And the nicest, kindest, sweetest man in the world. Gave me everything I have, including my work ethic, which is something I'm pretty proud of. Guys, we were on the front row of the Baptist church every time the doors opened. I get so frustrated when people want to blame their alcoholism because of something external. You know, the way I caught alcoholism, guys, and it is genetic. It's been proved. Let's just get that out of the way. I can send you this stuff that will explain it. But, guys, I'm going to tell you, it's a cascade of genetics that take place. If you happen to catch that, buddy, it's welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't know. My identical twin brother, some of y'all know Myers, he caught the bullet. We're the same little eggy, okay? So it's kind of natural. We would, most identical twins I know are out. If one's an alcoholic, the other's an alcoholic. I'm just saying. I'll take that back. Every identical twin I know is that. Okay. Just that's the way it is. But, I've got two sisters that did not catch that bullet, folks, raised in the same family and, nicest, sweetest people on earth. I got a little sister that lives over near Portland now. I watched her get sick one time. I watched her drink and we raised up because Pops was a drinker. And so we'd have sips of his beer and that kind of nonsense. And we got into high school, you know, she was sipping a little bit here and there, but she went to a sorority party and I was with her. I watched her get sick one time and she said, I'm never going to do that again. And I, guys, this has been a long time since that sorority party and I've never once watched her get drunk again. She just, you can ask her, we've been trying to get her drunk for years, you know, and she says, Lisa, drink up. She says, no, I'm starting to feel it. You know? Which is me too. Drink up. And I don't understand that. You know, see, that means I'm just going to stop. I don't understand that. We used to accuse her of being adopted. She couldn't possibly be a part of our family. But, you know, older sister, she can do a little. It's just, yeah. Alcoholism is not causal, folks. Just this illness is genetically predisposed. And I don't know. I was kind of a early bloomer, I guess, for some. I was about 17, guys. It was the month that Bill Wilson passed away, January 1971. I took my first drink. I'd had sips of Pops beers occasionally, but I'd never had enough in my system to actually do anything. And I split a little bottle of Boone's Farm apple wine with a friend of mine. And it was all the old hippies in there laughing. They smiling. I always say it. So if you little young pukes in there, man, on your next relapse, see if you can find some Boone's Farm apple wine because it'll get you downtown. Don't spill it on the carpet because it ain't ever coming out. I'm just saying. There's not a grape in it. I don't know how they can call it wine. I think it's just all chemicals, but it was a real pretty green and, it was cold January night, big old full moon up there in Central Texas there. And we leaned up against one of those big old 700-year-old cypress trees and drank that bottle. And I got it in my system. And I got to tell you, walking back across that field that night, it was about 9:30, 10 o'clock that night, walking back home, it was perfectly clear to me why my dad drank. I finally understood what that was about. And I made a commitment, you know, I'm going to drink, but I'm not going to drink as much as dad. You know, I'm going to hold this together. God, we tried that forever. I went through the rest of my junior year in high school and all of my senior year. And it was just like little brother was talking about. We have keg parties out at the property and you know, dad would buy us keg beer back in the day. You know, he'd rather us drink on this property where we owned than he out there on the street someplace. I don't know how he expected us to get to the property. We were all driving. I don't know how we didn't die, but guys, we were partying a lot, guys, but we weren't. Yeah. This is, like I said, early 70s and, late 60s, early 70s, and everybody was smoking pot. We're a couple of hundred miles as the crow flies from Mexico, guys. And so, there was a lot of that coming across the border and it was just, peace, love, you know, everybody was getting loaded and, I couldn't wait to get out of the hill country. It was funny, years later, I couldn't wait to get back. But, my twin brother, after we graduated, we stayed around local for a little while and then we got in a Volkswagen Beetle that he had. And it was funny. We were going to go to Houston, Texas, about 4 hours west, east of us and stake our claim to fame. I wanted to be a professional chef, guys. I'd been cooking in the hill country. Again, I started working when I was 16 and I'm just, you know, I've always worked, always will. And, I was pretty good. Turned out to be a pretty talented little chef there for a long time. And I got accepted in this big apprenticeship program in Houston. And, it was a pretty honor. I knew some, my mom knew people that worked at the hotel, that had been at the hotel. And anyway, hook or crook, I got the backdoor job in, and it was pretty nice. And he had a bumper sticker on this Volkswagen Beetle driving into Houston called "Get Drunk and Be Somebody." I have no idea. Guys, we're 18 years old. We're not even old enough to buy booze in Texas. You know, we've got this Volkswagen Beetle. I mean, this was an arrest waiting to be had. You know, it's just nuts. We got in there, shared an apartment over there in Houston, Texas with three other guys, I think. You know how it is when you're younger, and a green shag carpet. You know, remember some of you old geezers, the green shag carpet, lime green appliances. Oh my God. Avocado, I think is what they call it. Never mind. But yeah, this was a bachelor pad, had two beanbag chairs, and there was always, there was bologna and mustard and bread and a 12 pack of beer. That was what was in our refrigerator. And we're all busting our butts and not getting in a lot of trouble, just having a lot of good time. But early on, guys, in my drinking, a lot like what Sydney was talking about, I started developing this stuff called depression early on. And the longer you drink, you're going to get to a little spot where, you know, it stops working is like it did in the past. And Bill Wilson talks about on 152, so you're going to get to a place where you can't imagine life living with it. You can't imagine life living without it. And early on, you know, it's just not as much fun. And people are commenting on how much I'm drinking, and people at work are a little concerned. And, you know, I'm holding it together still pretty good, but I'm convinced that if I could just get to a better place, I'd be okay. And early on, I was there for a couple of years, and then made my first geographic trying to run away from me. I borrowed some money from my mom so I could move. I'm convinced. She said, "What's the problem?" And she says, "I'm convinced that I'm drinking too much because I'm Houston and the traffic and all that." She said, "Well, where do you want to go?" And I said, "Well, I got this job opportunity in Austin, Texas." And if any of y'all know of Austin, Texas, home of the armadillo, I mean, it was a drinking, drugging, crazy city, and still is. And that's where I moved. I got a sous chef's job at a big old country club, and I'm thinking that's going to fix the problem. Well, y'all know the rest of that story. It didn't, you know. In a short time later, 2 years later, I moved to Atlanta, Georgia. And 9 months later, I moved back to Vernon, Texas. You know, and I started this geographic stuff. And I still drive a pickup truck, guys, because you never know when you might need to move again. You know, I'm running from everything. And it's like I do good at my job, my career. I started setting boundaries. If this ever starts affecting my career, I'll stop. If this affects this, I'll stop. You know, but I've always got other people I could go to. They're drinking more than me. And so I'm comparing my stuff, and, you know, I'm not getting arrested. I'm not robbing liquor stores. I'm not doing a lot of the crazy stuff that some of y'all are doing. And so I don't think I'm an alcoholic. Back in the day, changed jobs, got out of the food business for a while, got into sales. Who knew that salesmen drank? I mean, I had no idea. Jeez. With an expensive account, and yeah, this is nuts. Got back into retail, went back to the food business, started a catering company. Guys, and I was successful at all of this. I may not look too sharp, but I am. And I mean, I did pretty good. But I'm miserable, guys. About mid-70s, I seeing doctors for the depression. Of course, they all ask the stuff, "Chris, are you drinking?" So, "Well, I have a couple. I drink a little bit." "Okay, that's fine. Well, listen, let's give you some antidepressants." And so now I'm on some medication, and later, years later, I was on different medications, and I'm handfuls, as a matter of fact. I'm not out there on the street looking for meds, guys. Why? I've got doctors that will give them to me at request. Always trying to treat this internal stuff. If y'all get a chance, Sydney mentioned it. If y'all get a chance, look on page 52 in the big book. Bill Wilson talks about the bedevilments. Read the bedevilments, not from when I'm drinking, do you experience this stuff, but when I'm not drinking, do you experience this stuff? There's so many people out there that believe that alcohol is the problem. If I can just stop drinking, everything will be okay. I mean, we watch people come into treatment believe that all the time. That is absolute rubbish. Alcohol treats alcoholism. You take alcohol away from a real alcoholic, we get worse, not better. That's when we start looking at bridges to jump off of. because we realize we're in a jam. I know I can't drink, but I know I can't not drink, because the only time I can even breathe deep, just relax at all, is when I'm using it, when I'm drinking. The bedevilments, yeah. Depression, number one symptom of untreated alcoholism. And I'm trying to treat it with pills. On one of my geographics, I moved back to Houston and was working at a different job again. And there's a cocktail waitress there that worked at a place my brother was tending bar at, and she was a sweetheart. And I, hook or crook, I sweet-talked her and made a deal with God that night, sitting in the parking lot, looking at the Astrodome. Some of y'all have ever been to Houston. The Astrodome used to be just, now nobody even notices it anymore. There's so many other bigger places, but it was the eighth wonder of the world at one time. And sitting in this parking lot over there in this old redneck bar, and made a deal with God. I said, God, if you could let this woman marry me, I'll clean up my act. I'll quit drinking and I'll become somebody. I had a therapist supporting that, you know, put some roots down. And anyway, dandy, she did. And, 2 weeks later, I'm going, God, if you could just kill this woman, everything would be okay. I'll quit drinking. I'll just, all of y'all are laughing, but y'all all done that. And if we could just buy the house, if we could just sell the house, if we could just get the job, if I could just move to Virginia, if I could just move to Texas, if I, something external is going to change so I can be okay. I got to show you this. Y'all see in my little, I can't get to it. I'll put him up there in a minute. We stayed local for a little while, and then we moved up to North Texas. My twin brother taken over my father, went up there to help him, and was learning the bookbinding profession, which he still is. And went up there to be closer to him. Myers and I have been thick as thieves forever. We just don't want to be too far apart. And he's actually going to move here to the Hill Country here soon. So it's like, yay, you know, I can't wait. But moved up to North Texas and she got a job and I got a job at a country club. And we're doing good. I bought my first little house and got me a little semi-new pickup truck. And guys, that's Texas. Buy house, you know, job, girl, pickup truck. And that's it. And then the Holy Trinity. I'm sitting on the front porch of that old little house just crying because I'm so uncomfortable in my skin. I'm just miserable. I don't like my job. I don't like where I'm, I don't get anything. And I had this opportunity with the chef. This guy made me a hell of a deal. If I could come open this restaurant with him and I could share with some of the profits and same old stuff. I've been with him and this was the early 80s, guys. I know it's an AA talk, but we're going to mention this one thing. In early 80s in the United States, guys, because of Miami Vice, everybody in the United States was doing cocaine. Okay. Even people who are not drug addicts. Okay. Most of you little alcoholics I knew, you know, Miami Vice, y'all can still hear the song in your ear, right? Okay. Yeah. We all thought we were Don Johnson, little drug runners, you know. Okay. We were, yeah. And I'd done a bunch of that nasty stuff at work and a bunch of drinking and came home and was just nuts. And something was said. I don't remember what the fight was about. Had a little pushing match with my wife. And again, guys, raised on the front row of the Baptist church. We don't touch women like that. And I'd never have again. But it scared me to death. It freaked me out. She asked me to leave. And I mean, I just let me come back in a few hours later after I'd sobered up and I apologized. You know, we had the conversation about me getting sober, and she didn't know about the outside issue stuff. And she knew I was drinking, but she didn't know how much. And as alcoholics, we can flat put it away. And I got to say it, guys, because I can't share my story and not share it. When I looked her in the face that night, it was late, late, late. And I looked her in the face with tears in my eyes and told her that I was going to stop drinking, that I was going to do better. I meant it with every fiber in my body. You know, I have a problem sometimes. I know it's humorous when people want to paint pictures that we're all goofy and we're all liars and horse thieves in here. It's just not true. And it stops a lot of people from getting comfortable in Alcoholics Anonymous. Dr. Silkworth wrote a great little piece. I can send it to you sometime if you want it. But it was a little excerpt from this little article. And he talked about the simple fact that people want to make us out to be goofy because we're alcoholic. There's a great little book out there, a guy in New Zealand wrote called Alcoholics Ambiguous. I don't agree with everything in the book, but he makes this real clear point. We are not different than other people. We're different than other drinkers. I meant it when I told her that I was going to stop. What I didn't understand is that I didn't have the ability to manage the decision to stay stopped. Bill Wilson talks about different types of drinkers on page 20 and 21. He talks about it. And he says, guys, if you could stop because you want to or need to, go for it. You're not one of us. Have a nice life. A real alcoholic's not going to be able to do that. And I didn't understand that. I went to AA, my first AA meeting the next day. This is probably 81. And the nicest bunch of people in the world keep coming back. Oh, hugs. You know, just they were sweethearts. And there wasn't a big book in the place. And we didn't talk about the steps. We talked about, you know, everybody's problems. And, you know, they went around the room that night and tried to scare the bejesus out of me, telling me all their scary war stories. And of course, I'm sitting there checking this stuff off, guys. I don't have drunk driving charges. I'm not blacking out. I'm not robbing liquor stores. I'm not running around naked. Maybe once, but I did not on a regular basis. I mean, I'm not doing a lot of the crazy stuff. I'm not having sex with animals. I just stop with the war stories already. I just plead. It scared me out again. I come back in. A week and a half later, I drank with the chef again. One drink, one beer, pat myself on the back, came home, and she smelled the booze, and that was it. You know, I broke all the trust with her that I was going to make. I didn't last a week and a half. And it still freaks me out. People in the industry, in the treatment business, our family members, they all still think the same. If you really, really want to do this, you can get sober. That's nuts. This is part of my story, guys. I'm 7 years in alcoholics, six and a half years in Alcoholics Anonymous, in and out of the rooms of AA. I'll come in, sit back against the wall, folded arms, waiting to be offended so I can leave again. I do great, guys. I can detox in a heartbeat. I'll stop on a dime. I'll quit drinking. I'll detox sitting in the rooms. I'll listen to your stupid stories. You'll follow. We're just all by myself over there, just watching and build a case to leave because I'm feeling so uncomfortable. I'm a 2 week wonder, guys. About the end of 2 weeks, you know, I'm feeling better after I got sober. I mean, I'm exercising a little bit. Half the amends I had to make were gyms that I signed up for. Every time I'd get sober, I'd sign up for another gym. You know, who knew it was a 10-year membership that I still owe money on? You know, I was like, oh man. God, I'd go to the gym. I'd start eating a little better. You know, I'm thinking, God, I should have done this years ago. I feel great. And in about 2 weeks, all the bedevilments we talked about on 52 start coming back. Irritable, restless, discontent. Feeling of uselessness, low self-esteem. You know, I'm paraphrasing. I just unable to control my emotion. I'm driving to work. One minute I'm just, oh, this is so nice being sober. Because somebody cuts me off, I'm flipping fingers. I'm getting verbal altercations every time I turn around. I am miserable. Too often, folks, we paint this picture to the newcomer that that's what life is going to be like. It's just a struggle one day at a time to stay sober. That is absolute 100% crap. That's not true. If you're not working the steps, that's true. If you're not having a spiritual experience, that's exactly what's going to happen. I know I come across real rigid about this, guys. I just get crazy when people paint the pictures that this is just a nightmare getting sober. It's tough. I'll be the first to be. It doesn't have to be near as tough as we make it, folks. It just doesn't. And I'm 7 years in and out, six and a half. I can't get sober. And I'm on all kinds of medications. I'm seeing doctors. And, guys, I'm doing everything I can. I'm going to a church built like a pyramid. I'm sitting in sweat lodges. I've been rolled, neutered. I've done everything. I even did colonics one time trying to get sober, guys. Now, I'm going to tell you, you got to want to get sober really, really bad to do that. Y'all can see your little face. What's colonic? I'll tell you later. All right. I'm just saying. I didn't get sober, but my complexion was awesome. I'll just say that. I'm willing. I want to get well, guys. I need to get well. And 1987, I'm working for my twin brother. I can't cook any longer. I've had some periods of success in the food business, but I can't do the hours. I get kidney damage and liver damage, and I'm miserable. I'm living by myself in a little apartment with two stinky little ferrets, and I'm 35 years old, guys, and I'm living from paycheck to paycheck, and I'm just miserable. Nothing's worked, and I've done everything you've asked me to do to stay sober, and it's not working. I came home one night, afternoon, and stopped and bought a 12-pack of Black Label, and that's rot gut beer. I don't even know if they make that stuff anymore either, but it was like $3 a 12-pack. I mean, it was just cheap. And went to my little apartment, picked up a stack of return checks in the mail. I bankrupted another stupid checking account. Now I'm going to have to go to my sister-in-law and borrow money. I'm just done. And I went to the medicine cabinet and took a couple bottles of pills and tried to commit suicide. Nothing romantic, nothing. I just coward's way out. I just can't keep doing this, guys. And I see no way out. And I have no idea what I heard that night. I believe God intervened in me, though. And I'm hearing a voice that said, don't do this. Go back to AA. And I'm arguing with a voice. I've been 7 years, all this time, and I'm still in the same mess. And I don't want to go back to AA. And I fed the ferrets and decided to abort the suicide attempt and made myself sick. Luckily, thank God I didn't die. And the next morning I got up and I was still hearing that voice in my head. Don't just go back to AA. And that day as it was, God was all over it. I called a doctor at lunchtime so he could monitor my detox because I'm a mess. And committed to go to a meeting that afternoon. And luck was having, I had to work a little late. And I couldn't go to the meeting I usually went to because it was across the, it was a bunch of miles away. But I knew where this other meeting was because somebody had pointed it out. And, this old guy that worked with us one time, he said, Chris, if you ever want a real AA meeting, there's a Big Book meeting over here. And he showed me where it was. And I didn't know what a Big Book meeting was. It didn't sound very good. It sounded like a place that you were not going to get a date at. I'll throw that out there. Perhaps I wasn't going to go, but I was running late. And I was going to go back and let these guys know that I was coming back to Alcoholics Anonymous. And I parked in the back so nobody would know, because this is anonymous. And I found out a few months later after I got sober that my mom had me on the prayer list of every church in North Texas. I mean, nobody in North Texas didn't know that I was an alcoholic. All you had to do is look at my pickup truck and know that was an alcoholic pickup. I mean, it was just like one big old dent with a license plate attached to the back. And the windows busted out. And I'm like, oh, my God. I went in the back deal, and I don't want to run out of time, but I started to leave. I got real self-conscious in there, guys, and I'm trying to hightail it out. And this little girl got between me and the door and said, sit down, cowboy, you're not going anywhere. And she's laughing, she's smiling, guys. She hooked her finger in my belt loop, set me down next to her. And her sponsor was across the way, guys, and couldn't get to me. And she said, get him. And I was in a room full of people that everybody pretty much understood the primary purpose. And they knew I was leaving. And the chairperson seen me up in North Texas for years, guys. He's waving me on. Come on in, Chris. Come on in. And sit by me. And I was so self-conscious I couldn't. Guys, I just a mess. And I weigh about 60 pounds more than I weigh now. And I had this big old nasty full beard like my twin brother wears still. And I just looked like hell. And patch was always crooked. And I just hadn't bathed in days. And I was just, I was a sight to behold, I got to tell you. And little girl sat down and got me a cup of coffee and a roll of paper towels because I kept spilling it. I'm shaking like a son of a gun. But the chairperson, I'll never forget it. Like I said, he was 10 years sober when I got sober. He looked at me for a bit, and he looked up at the wall, and of course the steps and the traditions are up on the wall, and he said, man, they started the meeting just like this with the readings, and said, man, we got a newcomer coming back in. Why don't we go around the room and tell Chris how our lives have changed as a result of working the steps? Now, guys, I've been to hundreds of meetings in Alcoholics Anonymous up to this point. I've never heard that as a topic. Every time you got a first step guy coming back in, a relapser, the topic is always, let's tell Chris how you got here. Let me just tell you guys, I don't give a poot how you got here. I don't care. Neither does that newcomer that you're trying. Yeah, stop. You're going to keep doing it, guys. Y'all go ahead. I'm not trying to be mean. I'm just trying to say, guys, you're not going to scare anybody into recovery ever. And I got to tell you, we do some harm with that. Just nothing to reflect. That nice little lady walking in the door that's got to get a little court paper signed, she's a real alcoholic and needs some signing. She's dressed to the nines. She's coming to her AA meeting. She's got a $600 Louboutin bag sitting on her lap. and we're going to go around and tell her how many people we chopped up and put in plastic bags and you know, how many. No. Save that story for Friday night speaker meeting, maybe. Yeah, and I know you don't have to agree, guys. You cannot scare a newcomer into recovery. Oh, my God. You know how many emails? I'm 33 years sober. You know how many emails, phone calls, texts I've gotten over the years that say, Chris, I remember you talking about from the podium eating out of a dumpster in Houston, Texas, and I stopped drinking that day. I'll never drink again. Do you know how many of those emails I've gotten? Zero. None. You know how many thousands of emails I get from people that hear us talk about the power of God and how our lives completely changed as a result of doing a few things that Alcoholics Anonymous we didn't want to do? Gazillions. Guys, we're supposed to pull people with a vision. That's what the old timers finally taught me. We're not trying to scare them into recovery. That, you're free to disagree, but the thing that ties us together, folks, is the symptoms of alcoholism. Everybody in this room is different. Look at this little room, buddy. We got lots of different people in here, guys. The thing that ties us together is the symptoms, the physical craving that the doctor's opinion talked about and the mental obsession in the back of, on page 24 that Cindy was talking about in the book. It's the specific pages, 20 pages from 23 to 43, talks about the mental obsession. There's some great stories in there specifically that talk about what happens when we really want to quit and we can't. We can't stop. And pretty amazing. I didn't know it was there because nobody had ever showed me. I'm all these years in AA and I don't even own a big book. I've never been qualified. I've never had a sponsor, but I'm a meeting making fool because that's all anybody's trying to tell me. Meeting makers make it. 90 meetings, 90 days. You'd relapse, come back in. Well, Chris, you just need to double up on your meetings. Hot dang, girl. I'm already going to 2 a day. What do you want me to do? Get a sleeping bag and move to the AA club? It's like, somewhere, guys, we got to get back on the page. Yeah, let's start talking about the literature again. We probably helped some of these folks stay sober. I think it was pretty cool. I got to tell you, there was a lady across the table from me, kind of catty corner, and she was younger than I was, but she'd been in AA about a year and 3 months, if I remember. We became real good friends. She had a little set of car keys, and she'd got her a brand new car, and she was all excited about that. And I'd just been turned down for a car loan 2 weeks earlier. There was an old pickup I wanted to buy and couldn't apply. It was a cheap pickup to the guy and I couldn't get the money to do it. And here she was, you know, she got her a brand new car and guy sitting next to her started a little landscape business. And he had gotten sober and started a little business and he was all excited. And luckily, guys, we were a part of a group where they didn't spend a lot of time telling us what we couldn't do. I just drives me crazy when I go to groups like that and listen to people. You know, my sponsor won't let me make any major decisions for the first year. I said, buddy, that is not what the big book says. It says, be careful. Pay attention to what you're doing. Because I got to tell you, some of us need to make some major decisions in the first year. You know, you're living with Satan. You need to get out. You know, run, Forrest, run. We got to make some changes. And he was all excited, guys, I got to tell you. And a lady at the end of the table had a sketch pad and she was sketching pictures while she was in the meeting. You know how some people knit and she'd gone back to art school and got a little art degree. She was older than I was and I'm sitting there thinking, God dang, you know what, man, I could do that. And guy sitting next to me tapped me, I jumped because I couldn't see him, but he flopped his billfold out in front of me and he had some Polaroid pictures of his little kids. And he'd come to AA and met this little girl in AA and they got married and had a couple little rat kids and he was showing me these little pictures and he was just like tears in his eyes. He was so excited about, you know, I was like, yeah. Guys, remember, I'm living in an apartment by myself with two little ferrets. That's as close to family as I've got. You know, I'm less than 24 hours away from a suicide attempt. And these people gave me the one thing I needed more than anything, and that was hope. That's why I guarantee you I will never introduce myself on the podium as anything other than a recovered alcoholic. Because the big book asked me to introduce myself to the newcomer as a person who has recovered. I'm going to try to share some hope with that little newcomer that life can change. Not going to, oh my God. And that's what those guys did me. End of the meeting, they asked me if I wanted to stay sober a day at a time, and I picked up what was going to be my last desire chip. Who knew? And on the way out of the door, this old cowboy got in front of me. I'll never forget him. Old Texas guy. He was wearing these nice little country western suit. He had one of those belt buckles on about the size of a dinner plate. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Had a cowboy hat on. I mean, this was not a country cowboy. Y'all thought this was a city slicker. You know, I mean, he looked sharp, mate. And, y'all are going to think I'm making this up, guys, but he had a Cadillac in the parking lot with bullhorns on the front. Yeah. And his name was JR. Come on, you can't make this shit up. Come on, really? I'm like, what? And he stopped me, him and another old guy, and they're both passed away a long time. They were one beautiful men. And they stopped me on the way out, and they said, Chris, could you sit with us for a few minutes? We watched you up here in North Texas for years play this game in and out, in and out. And they said, buddy, maybe let's try to help you figure out why you can't stay sober. Now, I'm a little incensed by this. You know, I have the best psychiatrist in North Texas. Y'all understand? I mean, I've got a therapist on speed dial. If we had cell phones, then we didn't. But y'all understand? I mean, I'm surrounded by trained professionals trying to help me get sober. And now this old cowboy wants to fix this for me, help me out here. You know, okay. He said, Chris, it's not going to take long. You look like hell. You need to go on the detox. And that's what I was going to do. It was Kentucky Fried Chicken and home. That was me. And I was going to detox all weekend. And he sat down with me and opened the big book, and he showed me the pages we just talked about. So he cherry-picked. We didn't start at the title page and start reading, guys. He just cherry-picked, showed me some stuff in the doctor's opinion where it talked about the phenomenal craving, and showed me the mental obsession over in those pages we talked about. And there's two questions on page 44 that talked about, when you drink, can you drink what you intend to do? I'm paraphrasing. You know, when you want to quit, can you stop? No. First time in all of those years, somebody finally qualified me. And I knew I was an alcoholic. He said, Chris, if you work these steps at a pretty good clip with us, I guarantee you can recover and you'll never have to drink again. And I said, I really don't know. He said, we don't care if you believe that or not. Will you come with us and do this? And I said, yeah. I got to tell you, I drove home that night with tears in my eyes. It was a 10-minute drive back to my little apartment. And because I understood for the first time that I didn't have all these psychiatric disorders. I'm on 7 prescription medications a day, all for illnesses that I didn't have. What I had was untreated alcoholism. I can't tell you how many thousands of people in Alcoholics Anonymous I watch all the time that have been diagnosed with all these illnesses. And they all look a lot like untreated alcoholism. And then they get sober and they get well. I'm not a doctor and I'm not telling you to stop taking your medications. I'm saying I didn't have to. Under a doctor's care, I was able to wean off all those medications. And who knew? It was pretty cool to get up and not have to take a handful of pills. And the next morning I went back to that meeting. Couldn't wait to go back. And after the meeting, these guys kind of got me. They kind of tricked me. They kind of dragged me back to the Al-Anon room, and they chased a bunch of ladies out of there and said, we need to borrow this room for a few minutes. And there was a couple of guys, and we got on our knees and did a third step prayer in there. And they said, we got a guy that's going to sponsor you. And they picked this guy for me, and it just as good and nice as could be. And people who normally would not mix. This is an old hippie. I am not, you know, but here he was, you know. And it was pretty cool. We went to get some Mexican food at lunch, and they came back and they dropped me off at my car, and they gave me a notebook, and they said, Chris, start making a list of the people that you're resentful at. And they started to be on a 4-step. 2 weeks later, I've got a completed 4-step ready to do a 5th. And I'm sitting on the tailgate of my truck, and it dawns on me that the obsession to use is lifted. Sun's going down up there in North Texas. Y'all fall, guys. It's in November. It's colder than hell up there. And I'm just sitting up there, and it dawns on me. I don't want to drink. Not, I don't want to drink. It's like, I'm done. That obsession was removed from me 2 weeks in, folks. I don't know when it happened. I just know that as a result of me getting off my butt and getting active in this program, things shifted in my life. And I have watched it happen a gabillion times with guys I've sponsored. Guys I don't sponsor. I've just seen it. I'm surrounded by liquor stores, guys. I there's nobody in my apartment except them little ferrets still. Friday, and I got some money in my pocket. I could go buy booze if I want it. Nobody's going to stop me, but it's just like I don't want to. I'm done. pretty excited, guys. I got excited about going back to school. I got excited about starting a little screen print business. And, you know, I just, again, I got to say, I love these old geezers in the meeting, the men and women in those rooms that just didn't spend any time at all telling me what I couldn't do. They just got excited. Chris, if you get excited, the more guys said, man, you find a job in AA, guys, you're going to stay. They said, man, if you get happy in your life, your chances of staying sober are going to be better. What the hell? Okay. And I did. It was 2 weeks in after that. It was right there that same week when I'd had that little spiritual experience. And they said, those old guys that got me after that meeting said, Chris, listen, we're going to get together and we're going to have group conscience next week, next Wednesday night. And we want to nominate you as chairman of the cleanup committee. And I said, you know, I was, no, because I'm in the food business, guys. You know, they think I can know how to clean a kitchen. I said, guys, I appreciate that. That would be a real honor, but I'm not really interested. You remember me? I'm the new guy, the most important person here. You know, one more time, I want to go sit against the wall and be left alone. And they said, nah. Okay. I said, listen, I'll come to the group conscience, but I mean, you know, nobody knows me. They're not going to vote me in anyway. So, you know, but thanks anyway. Anyway, 30 or 40 people at group conscience that night. First group conscience I'd ever been to in all those years. And they unanimously voted me in as chairman of the cleanup committee. God, you know, and I'm proud for a second and I'm mad at a second. I'm mad. They railroaded me is what they did. And they're all there smiling. Everybody, yeah. And I went in after the meeting, we're putting the chairs up, getting everything. It was a little AA club with one group there. And that's what it was. We had different meetings. And they said, and I asked him, I said, the old guy, I said, listen, could you give me a list of the rest of my committee? If I'm going to do this, at least I can organize a cleaning rotation so that we can clean this club up. Like, and literally, this guy spit coffee clear across the kitchen. He had it in his mouth. And he said, Chris, there's no committee. You're it. You're the janitor. Okay. Here's the closet. Here's the vacuum cleaner. Here's the cleaning supplies. And they got, here's the keys to the club. Bye bye now. Good night. And I stayed away for 2 days, guys, because I was going to punish them. I mean, I was mad. Okay. Got my little feelings hurt. And, 2 days later, I took off work early and my brother let me off and he was to get sober in another couple of months. But he let me off and I went in there about 1 o'clock in the afternoon and cleaned that club like a big dog, guys. Listen, let me tell you again, my wife may disagree, but I know how to clean a kitchen. All right. And I cleaned that old nasty kitchen and that bathroom. Let's not even talk about the bathroom. What is it about AA bathrooms? It looks like an Exxon station for heaven's sake. And I in there cleaned that place like a big dog and the coffee pots, all that brown stuff out of there. And I got, yeah, this place vacuum, chairs were set up with a ruler. I mean, this, okay. And it's about 5:30, meeting starts at 6. I got coffee made and I'm sitting in there. Guys, And I'm sitting back there in the back room. I got to tell it, try to do it without crying. And I hear the little matriarch of the group comes in. She was 140 years years old when I got sober. I don't know how old sober she was, but she was old as Methuselah. She's just like a little question mark. You know, she just shuffled in and she was an absolute sweetheart. She walked in, I could hear her in the kitchen. She was squealing and she walked around to the bathroom and I thought she was going to have a heart attack. You know, she walked back around and she looked around the corner and see me in the meeting room. I'm sitting there in my little Frugaloom t-shirt, one of the three I own, and I'm soaking wet. I'm working my butt off, guys, cleaning that place. And she said, did you clean this place? I sat up a little bit and said, yes, ma'am. She walked around behind me and got her little bony arm around my neck, gave me a little back hug. I could still feel her breath on my cheek. She said, boy, we need you here. She gave me a little hug like that. Been telling that story for 33 years. I didn't try to commit suicide 3 weeks earlier because I was drunk. I tried to commit suicide because I felt completely useless in this world. And those old folks in that young men, I mean, all the whole group kind of took me on the raise, guys. And they gave me a job in Alcoholics Anonymous. They wouldn't let me sit on my butt and feel sorry for myself. Self-pity kills more alcoholics than anything else in the world, folks. And I mean, They had me, they showed me how to answer the phone. They showed me how to, you know, I mean, I'm all of these years in AA. I've never read how it works. I've never chaired a meeting. I don't make coffee. Y'all understand? I've never taken, I've never done a damn thing but sit in the room and feel sorry for myself. And I'm going to take full responsibility for that. But at a certain point, the newcomer needs to understand that there is something that's going to have to take place that's different in order to get well. And it's not keep coming back. If the best thing we can do to the newcomer, I'm on a soapbox about it, guys. It just drives me crazy. If all we're going to do to that newcomer is tell them to keep coming back, we're missing the boat. I didn't know you had to work the steps to get sober. I didn't know what a spiritual experience was. All right. I could have asked. I could have gone to a different meeting. I didn't know there were other meetings. I thought they were all the same. When did it become okay out there, guys, to not tell the newcomer how this thing works? Bill Wilson said, in a letter, I always talk about it. There's a letter in 1942 that said, our chief responsibility to the newcomer is an adequate presentation of the program. I've got a poster in our AA club like that. We sell little stickers in there that says it on the back for our little AA club. You know, our chief responsibility is that little newcomer. I don't care if he's just getting out of treatment. I don't care if he's been in AA for years. Just is to make sure that he understands how to get well. If they know how to get well and they just don't want to do it, that's okay. It just breaks my heart though when people leave AA. I hear them come into treatment all the time. AA didn't work. And then you talk to them for a few minutes and they find out that they did the same thing I did for years. Just went to a bunch of meetings. There's not one place in the big book that it says if you go to a meeting every day, you're going to stay sober. I'm not knocking meetings, folks. I went to a bunch of meetings when I got sober. But if that's all we're telling people to do, we're missing the opportunity to really help somebody that might really want some help. My soapbox, guys, I'll talk at Founders Day this year again. It's how cool, what an honor. And I'm going to say the same thing. Guys, we've never had a problem getting people to come to Alcoholics Anonymous. We have a problem getting them to stay. Fact. April 1939, they published the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. What is that? 82 years ago, we finally got a textbook that lined it out, 164 simple pages that would tell us how to get well. And yet, there's so many people out there that don't understand that the solution is here. You combine that with a beautiful fellowship and service work, you got our three legacies. You go kick some butt. I can't tell you how many treatment centers are out there. They don't talk about the 12 steps. They don't talk about recovery. They're dang sure, heaven forbid, that they talk about the spiritual experience. They're not going to do that. You assume that people have been given a presentation? They haven't. A lot of them haven't. So let's grab the ones that we can, guys, and save them. It's something about service and sponsorship. I was about 2 months, 3 months sober, I guess. Maybe 3 months, and a little newcomer come in, and I mentioned something about being a cook, and I was sharing, and this little guy was a chef at the Waffle House, and he was a little cook, and he stopped after the meeting, and I gave him my phone number. How many times did you give your number, and you know nobody ever calls? And this little knucklehead called me, and he said he's thinking to go to work, and he still had an hour or so, and he was thinking about drinking, and maybe could I come talk to him? And I did. I said, okay, God dang it. And I went and got my big book that they finally gave me at the AA club. And I went and sat with him for a while. And we started talking about cooking, and we ended up talking about recovery and our drinking, and we're laughing, and we're like that, you know. I came home about 3 hours later, you know, I went in and had dinner with him, and I came home, and the girl I was living with at the time was freaked out. She figured we all went out and got drunk, you know, and she was a little worried, and she's mad, and I should have called, but I didn't. And anyway, when she finished getting mad, she looked at me, and she said, well, whatever you're doing, keep doing it, because it seems to have helped. Because I got to tell you, I was on fire. You know, to sit there and be able to share with somebody about how cool this is, about recovery, in just a few months. And that so many people out there, they get twisted around the axle around that. I get so many people that all they want to do is talk about how many, you know, you've got to wait a year to sponsor somebody. You've got to wait. I had a guy stop me in New Orleans one time. We don't let anybody in New Orleans sponsor until they're 5 years sober. Guys, my big book on the bottom of page 129 says, It is well to let him go as far as he likes in helping other alcoholics. During those first days of convalescence, this will do more to ensure his sobriety than anything else. Don't pat him on the butt and tell him to keep coming back. Let him go sit in the meetings and go crazy. Grab him and say, let's go. You know, the old expression with the old guy, get in the truck, let's go. You know, take a meeting to that old halfway house. Go pick up the big books. Go do anything to go help somebody, and you're going to feel so much better. I got to say this, guys, to wind this down. That's been my experience. And this has been a tough year. I pretty much roll with the punches, guys. I believed in God before I got sober. I just got to a spot, guys, where it's been a tough year with the coronavirus and they're shutting the meetings down, and we had to learn Zoom, and we had to do some things that were, you know, just learn. And for old geezer, sometimes I don't want to learn, you know. God bless you guys for starting the meeting and doing these kind of deals so folks can get on. It ties us together, guys. I was doing a meeting yesterday afternoon in Bristol, England, and got to see some old buddies I hadn't seen since I spoke in London in 2000. And, you know, it's just all of my friends. You get to see so many people. I get to see people in here that I've known for years. It's been a blessing, I got to tell you. I have watched more people with double-digit sobriety relapse this year than ever before. Long-term sobriety dropping through the crack. These were people whose meetings got closed down, who refused to do Zooms, and they pulled themselves apart. I'll stay in touch, but I'm not going to do those stupid things. Okay, all right. But you see, guys, unless we stay connected with each other, we are not going to stay sober. It's a three legacy deal, guys. The steps, hugely important. Service, essential. Bill Wilson just talks about it more than anything else in the book. Help others. Unity, fellowship. You have to have some folks in your corner to help you stay on the path. I don't care if you're 60 years sober. I don't care if you're two days sober. You're not going to do this by yourself. Alone in my own head, I will rationalize and justify eventually why it's okay for me to eat a stupid benzodiazepine, smoke a joint, do something stupid that will lead me straight back to the alcohol. And I don't want to do that. But it wasn't just about the drinking stuff. This year, it was such a blessing to get to lean on so many of y'all in these rooms. So many people that I've known for years that I reconnected with thanks to Zooms. Could pop on and text and visit and just, it became perfectly clear at 33 years that I needed you way more than you will ever need me. The little guys I sponsor are the highlights of my life. To go to that little AA club and watch these little newcomers get excited about recovery, it's the absolute best. And that's what it's about. If I'm sponsoring somebody, guys, and you're not sponsoring, you know, that little guy is not sponsoring somebody, you know, by about 60 days, 90 days out, we're going to have a big old talk. Because there's no free rides here, guys. This is, yeah, we're not therapists, guys. We're not counselors. We're just little bozos. We got a story. We know what happened, and we have the absolute solution. We have our experience to share with that. What else do you need to work with a newcomer? If one of them little knuckleheads calls me and asks me a question I don't know the answer to, God damn, guys, I got a Rolodex like you wouldn't believe. I can call people all over the world that can help me answer this guy's question. I don't have to have all the answers, which is pretty cool. So it's something that absolutely has changed my life, guys. And I'm going to put my little email on there, guys. Some of you guys know how to reach me, and I hope we could all stay together. And Billy, thanks so much for asking me to speak. And what an honor to share the podium again with Sydney and my buddy Steve. Come up here just a little bit and clean up my mess. I don't want anybody to miss the opportunities that we have. I'm going to leave you with this, guys. Nowhere in the big book does it say this is about just not drinking. This was about being happy, folks. This is about, like Sydney was talking, this is about going back to school. This is about starting businesses. This is about getting excited, painting pictures, starting charities, going out and helping other people. God, this is about having a full life. And I had a lady in Al-Anon one time. She said, how you doing, Chris? And I said, oh, God, my plate's pretty full. She said, maybe you need to get a bigger plate. Yeah. Yeah. Thanks for sharing. You know, yeah, that's exactly right, guys. I need to figure out ways to get more on my plate instead of less on my plate. Because I got to tell you, it's the coolest life in the world. And I want you to experience that. I don't want you to experience this just not hanging on one day at a time stuff. I want you to experience peace, ease, and comfort that the book talks about. And I know it happens to everybody that actually works the steps, guys. But work them quick. The steps were never intended to be worked slowly. It was. You can read the book slowly if you want to, guys. But cherry pick, get through this dadgum work quick like the old timers did. And you'll be blessed. I love every one of you guys. Thank y'all so much.